Danny C. and Wesley L. coming straight from Dude Division on Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, gentlemen. I hope you had a good Dude Division. I don't even know if they did Dude Division this year, if they had the festival. It's usually a pretty crowded one. I guess they had Lollapalooza this year, so why not? Good morning. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 773. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Go ahead, say hello online. On Twitter, at Outside the Loop is the handle. On Instagram, on Facebook. And be sure to download the podcast of this show. It is totally free. And wherever you get your podcasts, that is where you can consume this fine show. If you're not listening as it airs right now on the radio. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the studio today. And Colin Seaman is the producer of the show. Hi, Colin.
Nom, 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 nom.
What are you doing?
I'm just consuming the show. Nom, 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 nom.
This is kind of, I guess it's, they're all special shows, but this is show number 773, like the 773 area code, which encompasses much of Chicago.
Oh, look what you did.
Uh-huh.
Look what you did there, Mike. Well, I mean, we're way past show 312, so you've been waiting for this one a while.
Yeah, this one... You're right. This is coming up. I guess we have to wait for like 847, even though that's technically outside of Chicago proper, right?
Yeah, this is the last one. We got to make it count.
There's another one, though. Isn't there like a 21, not 219? Is it 219? There's another area code. I feel like they had to get another one because they were running out of numbers.
I just know 217, which is like Champaign area.
Right. We're past that.
We're way past that.
So I guess, yeah, 847 is the one, huh?
Well, no, let's make 773 the one. Come on, Mike. What are we doing today?
I like it. Well, we will today on this show, Colin, talk to one of the investigators at the Better Government Association, which is a great government watchdog agency, about what the city of Chicago knew about complaints that ultimately, when we talk about complaints with living conditions... These living conditions led to fatal fires. So we'll talk to Madison Hopkins from the Better Government Association. Also, we will learn about a nonprofit called Your Passion First, which emphasizes youth mentorship and inspiration. And we will hear a clip from Outside the Loop 449, not an area code around here, to my knowledge. Talking about neighborhoods and perspectives of neighborhoods. This was a show that I did in 2015. I talked to... three high schoolers from the Chicago Vocational Career Academy in South Chicago, and we're going to hear a clip from that show, and we'll explore a little bit about neighborhood perspectives. So that's all coming up, and didn't go to Lollapalooza, as we talked about last week, speaking of festivals with Dude Division, but I did talk to someone who actually works here at the radio station. And she said she had a very nice time because the band lineup was so bad. She wasn't having to go between stage to stage to stage to try to catch artists. She could kind of camp out because there was a bunch of folks that she didn't want to see. So she could hang back and they didn't feel like it was total insanity. Because I saw some images on Twitter and it looked like everybody in... Illinois went to Lollapalooza, but she said that wasn't entirely the case.
Yeah, I also saw the sea of people, but this individual was not persuaded by Miley Cyrus or Marshmello or Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, she loves the Foo Fighters, but she was not. Yeah, I don't think Miley Cyrus was the draw for her, but she said Foo Fighters, they were good. But she said it was overall a good time. And she's just, I guess they recommend everyone get tested if you want. But, allegedly everyone, 90% of people were vaccinated. So I don't know if I buy that, but.
I can't get over the Saturday lineup. Limp Bizkit, Megan Thee Stallion, Journey, headlined by Post Malone. What is that?
don't know. I don't know. I don't know. All right. Well, we're just going to sit on that for a second and think about it. Maybe that can just kick around your head, too. What kind of world are we living in? All I'll say is just get vaccinated. Everything will be fine. From 2014 through 2019, there were 140 fatal fires in residential buildings in Chicago, killing 170 people. In 42 of these fires, which caused 61 deaths, the city had prior knowledge of fire safety issues that were not fixed at the time of the fires. These statistics are part of a new Better Government Association report called The Failures Before the Fires. Madison Hopkins is an investigator at the Better Government Association, and she's the co-author of this report. Madison, welcome back to Outside the Loop.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a pretty astounding report. I mean, it's depressing, too, to know that this is going on. But essentially here, what you're saying is that the city of Chicago is not effectively enforcing fire safety codes, and they're not really acting promptly on tenant complaints when it comes to fire safety issues as well. When we say the city is doing this, who exactly are we talking about here?
Right. So we're talking about the buildings department officials, people within the Department of Buildings of the City of Chicago. And although, you know, we focused on fire safety issues, these same failures really apply to all sorts of hazards that we're finding in buildings across the city. And most of the time that ends up being in rental conditions. And so we're talking about failures that have happened really at every step of the way. You kind of touched on it there, but tenants will call in 311 and they'll complain that there's something wrong with their building. For example, a missing smoke detector or a blocked exit. And right away, we found that it can take months for city building inspectors to respond to check it out, if at all. And after then, there's no guarantee that the problems will really be escalated appropriately through the enforcement system to make sure they get fixed. So as a result, we found that some of these issues, even when they aren't flagged, can remain for months or even years.
So what's happening here is, you know, if you live in one of these buildings, maybe you go to your landlord, and if your landlord, you know, isn't responsive, then these folks are calling the city of Chicago, and the city is just taking its sweet time or maybe not even getting out there at all.
Right, exactly. What we're talking about here are violations of the building code. And so this is aspects of the Chicago laws that say, you know, even if you're not doing a new construction building or doing some sort of rehab, there's minimum standards that we need for different residential buildings. And those almost always come down to applying to safety. And it's the city's job, and it's specifically the Department of Buildings' mission to enforce these rules. And we found that, you know, even after the complaint process, there's really not a whole lot of formalized structure about, you know, which landlords are taken to court and which receive only a warning sign for sometimes very serious issues. And on top of that, there isn't really any oversight built into our existing systems to double check if we are handling cases correctly, if something could have been done better. And I think, you know, who's getting hurt in this process are the residents of Chicago.
Yeah. You know, you were able to speak to the city's buildings commissioner for this story. And what did he say in terms of, you know, who's responsible for what's going on here?
Yes, we had some pretty surprising responses from the building commissioner and other top officials within the department, but they don't accept any of the blame for any of this. They do not see that anything that the enforcement division could or could not have done would have played a role in any of these deaths. Instead, you know, they say it's the landlord's responsibility to upkeep these properties, and in some cases, place the blame directly on the victims themselves, you know, for not striking conditions or for a variety of things that, you know, I think would be debatable if they were in their control or not.
When we think about, again, I guess who's to blame for what's going on here, you also write about that our elected leaders might have some responsibility here because they have decided to cut back on building inspections and they've eased some regulations. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. We put out a second part of the story that was really looking at how did we get here, essentially, for what are our laws in Chicago. We found that the city, you know, has a pattern of following high-profile fatal fires, coming out and saying, we're going to fix things, things are going to be different, maybe sometimes proposing some legislation, but never really following through on that. And in reality, we found that our rules in Chicago for keeping people safe have kind of gone the opposite direction. We just recently looked at what other major cities have done to adopt or to reform for some of the problems Chicago has. And we found that while other cities are enacting programs to license their landlords or proactively inspect rental buildings instead of waiting for a complaint, Chicago's gone the opposite direction in recent years. Just in the past 5 or so years, they've eliminated requirements for landlords to be licensed. They eliminated requirements that any building be inspected on a regular time basis. So we've just seen the regulation and kind of the oversight of all of those take a note there.
So in terms of the city, I mean, what they're doing, it seems like they're siding with these landlords and making things easier for the landlords. And by doing so, I mean, putting the lives of the residents, of tenants at risk. I think that's what it boils down to.
You know, it's an interesting question. I really couldn't tell you. They wouldn't say specifically they're taking a side of the landlord. I would say it certainly appears that way in certain circumstances. And it can be difficult to make any sort of judgments on a wide scale basis when they just don't really have the rules in place, or, you know, they don't even collect the appropriate data to really look at how and why they're doing the things that they're doing, which really can be as difficult a process as any and frustrating.
And you know, bringing it back to sort of a larger view here, this seems to be part of a larger pattern of a system that is really slow to respond to the needs of residents and sometimes not responding at all. And these residents, again, it's not that they're not saying anything. They're calling 311. They're saying, hey, there's something not right here. But if you take a step back, I mean, this seems to be, again, a critique of, in general, how things are operating here in the city.
Right, exactly. And like I mentioned a little bit before, kind of touching on it, just expecting a tenant to get to the place where they're ready to call the city on their landlord, ready to rat out their landlord to the city, is a big step and can be very frightening to a lot of tenants who might fear retaliation or don't want to invite government into their homes for a whole plethora of reasons. And so just the fact that our system is based on this, we're putting the burden on tenants to flag serious safety issues first. The fact that tenants have already crossed this burden and they're flagging the serious safety concern, but then to know that they still cannot rely on the city to act appropriately and handle things in a quick and efficient manner to get their serious safety problems resolved is really a deterrent to safety. And it's a big problem that I would like to see the city address.
You know, it's interesting. One thing that jumped out at me when I read your piece, again, it's called The Failures Before the Fires, up at bettergov.org. The map of where these fires have occurred over the city of Chicago, it's not necessarily concentrated in one place. I mean, this is something that's north side, south side, and pretty much everywhere in between.
Correct. It really is happening everywhere. And we found that this is in roughly a quarter of all the fatal fires that have happened in Chicago during that time period. There were these early warning signs that we will never know if proper action had been taken. Maybe things could have turned out differently. One thing we do know is that the vast majority of these victims who we're talking about are non-white. And so there's this discrepancy there that we don't really have an answer for. And we would really like to have a response from the city about what this could mean about their enforcement practices.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, what now? This report is out there. Again, you can find it at bettergov.org. But what do you want to see happen? I mean, I would think that some hopefully elected leaders take a look at this and call for some investigation or some digging into what is going on or what is not going on. Maybe that's the case. What do you hope happens now?
Well, right after our investigation published, we asked Mayor Lori Lightfoot about the findings, and she kind of passed the buck a bit on it and said the majority of these fires happened under her predecessor, which is true. They happened under Mayor Rahm Emanuel, mm-hmm. but also nothing has really changed about the building enforcement system. So She said she's working on reviving a long abandoned list of the most chronically deficient landlords to publish, but that's still not going to address a lot of the issues here. So just last month, Alderman Gilbert Villegas introduced a resolution to call for hearings on the DOB's response. And I would like to see, you know, what's going to happen with that. And we're going to keep an eye on it because we would definitely like to get some answers to what's going to happen for all of these systemic problems we've identified.
Well, again, everyone can check out this report. Again, it's called The Failures Before the Fires, and it's up at bettergov.org. This report, co-authored by Madison Hopkins, who is an investigator at the Better Government Association. Madison, I appreciate your time. Thanks for all of your hard work on this report, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Will do.
Mentorship and inspiration can play a big role in helping today's youth grow up to be a force for good in our society. Sometimes, though, youth in underserved communities face some pretty difficult challenges in their lives. Your Passion First is a local 501c3 nonprofit organization that looks to engage in coaching and mentorship programs focused on helping under-resourced youth overcome adversity and succeed in what they are passionate about. Chris Thomas is the founder of Your Passion First, and Julius Spates is the Chief Engagement and Innovation Officer. They are both with us here on Outside the Loop today. Chris and Julius, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having us, Mike.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, I'll go to you first. You started this organization, and again, Your Passion First is its name. The website, yourpassionfirst.com, that's one, S-T, yourpassionfirst.com. Why did you start this?
Yeah, no, again, thank you so much for having us. One of the challenges I saw in my tenure in HR and recruiting was just a lack of engagement with people as organizations brought folks in new to the organization. But even more so as organizations brought in young adults to the organization, there was just a lack of mentorship, a lack of coaching, a lack of really dealing with some of those challenges that could come up at the home life. So I wanted to create a safe space for young adults to really find, define, and follow their passion into the workforce around areas that they are truly passionate about within the creative spaces. So we focus on art, music, entertainment, sports, and culinary. And it's project-based learning around mental health, entrepreneurship, and workforce readiness.
So Julius, as the Chief Engagement and Innovation Officer, Chris kind of gave us the layout there, but can you get specific? How does Your Passion First work overall? What do you do exactly?
So generally, kids apply for the program, and we have 15 kids from Chicago, 15 from Brazil, and 5 from South Africa. So they'll do weekly workshops where we cover areas, basically, as Chris just mentioned, mental awareness, mental health. We'll do that for the very first, like, you know, month or so. Go into skills mastery, like develop their skills, develop, distinguish what they're most passionate about and what comes most natural for them, and develop the skills kind of around that to show them different ways that they can potentially monetize what it is that they do. And then the last phase is execution, where we show them how to execute on those skills that they've just learned. And just like Chris said, it's project-based learning. So what will happen is they'll have weekly workshops, but in the beginning, they have an individual project in which they have the opportunity to pitch their story, pitch their brand, pitch a business, and compete at the end of the year in a pitch competition. And then they have another project, which is a team project, where they get international workforce experience. So we divide we have 5 concepts that align with each vertical, and they work on a project together, and they all wrap into a virtual hybrid music festival at the end of the year in November, where their projects, which are essentially 2-hour productions, will air during this this event that happens November 10th through the 17th. It also is a workforce readiness festival all merged in one. So there's content that runs for 7 days, 24 hours a day. And these projects are 2-hour projects that essentially will air during that time. So that's essentially how it's the overview of what the kids go through on a regular basis.
And Chris, what do these kids need? We're talking about kids that are coming from underserved communities, but when they come to your Passion First, what do you see are some big needs of the youth that come to you?
Yeah, for sure, man. And I definitely don't want to speak for every youth, because I think every youth is different, and every youth, you know, requires different attention and support. But I think the biggest thing is just that, right? A support system and someone to listen to them and to guide them. You know, kids for 18 years of their life, they're told what to do, right, by a lot of people. And so we don't really, and that's the way our program is set up. It's not saying, hey, this is what you have to do. Our program is set up in a way where we say, hey, what are you passionate about? And let's build around that. And so that takes a lot of listening, a lot of pointing them in the right direction of resources that can allow them to tap into their passion, whether it be through unpaid projects, through internships, through full-time hire. Everyone needs money, but I see a lot of these kids chasing money. And if you're always chasing the dollar, then that can run out. But if you're chasing what you love and what you're passionate about, and then can actually learn how to monetize on that, no one can ever take that away from you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a really important message to get across. Julius, I'll ask you, in terms of success stories, or what is success for this program? What does that look like? And I know that, again, each kid is different, and different ambitions and different goals. But in terms of success, what does that look like in your program?
Sure. It is different for everyone. In fact, that's one of the questions that we asked, like, early on. We ask, you know, the kids kind of like, what are you really looking to get out of the program? Because, again, so many people just, you know, kind of barked orders like, you should do this, should do this. So we have a pretty good idea of what, you know, kids are looking to get out of the program. So for some kids, it's they just want to get to know, you know, kids outside of their area that are going through similar things as them. Some kids want to develop an actual career, and we'll, you know, create a path for them by the time that they get out of it, right? That's one thing that we really want to do, is create a direct path and then link a support system of people within their career path that they can continually go to, right? So we're both speaking with the kids, but it's just as important to really encourage and attract, you know, different experts in all these different fields to be able to support these kids on a regular basis. And like Chris said, it's really a support system, right? So success is different for everyone. For me, my overall kind of objective is to cause this ripple effect. I come from the entertainment industry, and the one thing that I noticed years ago is entertainers go back into the dance community, underserved communities, and they get, from the way that they dress to the way, that they perform, what they write about, the music they listen to, everything. So it's told me that they influence adults. But then you have like the, you know, near peer influences, the younger generation, and they're also looking at the young adults as well. So with what I was so attracted to the program, because I felt that young adults have the power to both influence adults, but also influence the next generation. And if you could lift the caps and the limitations of the next generation, then you are transforming the world. So that's what it's all about for me.
Really, this is some great work that you guys have started here and affecting change across the city of Chicago, and really internationally, as we're talking about other countries involved as well. If you want more information on this organization, again, called Your Passion First, you can go to this website, yourpassionfirst.com. That's first with the number one, 1ST, yourpassionfirst.com. Chris Thomas is the founder of Your Passion First, and Julia Spates is the Chief Engagement and Innovation Officer. Guys, thanks so much for talking, and thanks for all of your great work.
Mike, thank you
so much.
It's been an honor, man, and looking forward to hopefully meeting in person or seeing you out at some of our events.
For years on this program, a topic that we have come back to often is telling a more complete story of Chicago. This includes communities that are marginalized or largely written off due to stereotypes. Recently, I was reminded of a show I did back in 2015, broadcasting from Chicago Vocational Career Academy High School in the South Chicago neighborhood. I had a chance to sit down with three high school students, Pierre Walton, Shaquayla Walker, and Monique Covington, and we talked about their experiences living in the city. Take a listen. Tell me about, your lives outside of school, and this is for anybody who wants to jump in. I mean, what do you guys like to do? What's your neighborhood? Where are you from?
Well, I live on 89th and Euclid. They call it Peel Hill. Like, my neighborhood is pretty nice. Like, I don't really hear a lot of bad stuff going on. It's mostly old people and stuff. So I'm the only young one on the block. So I got a lot of opportunities to make a lot of money doing stuff for older people. So I like my neighborhood.
You're a good guy in that neighborhood. Yeah, nice. Shaquayla, what about you?
I live over by Western on the south side. I live on 73rd and Maplewood. It's pretty much almost always quiet over there, but sometimes you do have police sirens and things that you normally hear. A couple of gunshots every now and then, but I don't really hear that much about everybody getting hurt around there. But it's my neighborhood, like my block that I live on, it's pretty nice. It's like clean grass, nice housing and everything. But I don't really communicate that much with people in my community. I just pretty much go along with my day and mind my own business sometimes.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
I'm just that type of person. I just like to keep my head up and just go smoothly throughout my day.
Okay. And Monique, what about you?
I actually grew up on 75th and Wentworth, and my neighborhood is actually good because it's like a lot of older people that live on the block. So basically we keep up the grass and we help the neighbors keep up their grass, and we help out a lot of people, and everybody know each other. So basically everybody family. So my neighborhood, you'll hear little things, sirens, police, but nothing major.
And I don't know how often you guys watch the news or read the newspapers, but do you guys sometimes feel like your communities, your neighborhoods are sort of looped into the, oh, there was another shooting on the south side? They always just say the south side.
Yes.
You know, they never say like, they just say the south side, and that
specific area.
Right, exactly. And even, you know, if they did, it's like, I'm sure there's much more that goes on in these specific areas than just shootings, and we never hear about that. But you mentioned that you hear some sirens and all that stuff, but it's living in the city. I live in Wicker Park and I hear sirens all the time. Do you guys sort of feel lumped into, you know, oh, you live on the south side? Oh man, well, it's pretty rough down there. Do you feel like that ever?
Yeah,
yes.
Like when they say like south side, east side stuff, like it's bad over there, I'm like, where? Not in my neighborhood. It's like,
yeah.
It's always a lot of positive stuff going on. Block clubs, like the park right around the corner, it's a lot of events that's going on there. It's a Chicago public. It's a park. It's a
public park?
Yeah, it's a public park. So yeah. Like, it's a lot of people. I see a lot of barbecues like on the weekends and stuff. Kids having fun. It's a water park there too. So I'm like, when they say bad stuff over here, I'm like, where? Like, not around my neighborhood. It's pretty quiet and good over here.
Yeah, what do you guys think?
I think sometimes when people ask me where I'm from, I tell them, they'd be like, you live over there, are you safe over there? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty safe, nothing really ever happens. But they'll just jump to conclusion and say, you know who be over there, they be doing this and doing that. And I just be like, well, I never really experienced much like that, but it's pretty much the same thing every time I tell somebody where I'm from.
And Monique, what about you?
People ask me about my neighborhood, and, you know, I live in Englewood, and they always say, like, oh my gosh, don't you be scared to go outside? No, I don't be scared, because things don't happen. Like, everywhere you go, it's bad. But
it's living in the city, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like wherever you are in the city, you run the risk. I mean, a lot of people are in this city.
Yeah.
And I've always maintained that 99% of the people that live in Chicago, no matter where you are, just want to, like, have a good life, you know? And they just want to get along and everything be cool and enjoy the things that we have here.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, and part of the reason why I'm here is because we hear the term the South Side, and it's like, oh my God, the South Side, we can't go down there. But what you're saying is there's a lot of good things happening here, especially here, like the Chicago Vocational Career Academy, a lot of good things happening here.
Yeah. Yes.
What do you guys think of Chicago overall as a city? And I know that's a pretty big question. It's a pretty big city. But from your experiences now as upperclassmen in high school, what do you guys think of Chicago?
I love Chicago because, like, I've been to other cities, and like, I'll ask, like, when I went out of town to Alabama, I forget which part I was in, with my cousins, and I was like, what is it to do here? And they like, nothing really, we just sit around. I'm like, man, y'all had to come to Chicago, cause there's a lot of stuff to do here.
Yeah,
we go somewhere, like go paintball shooting, go to the movies, go out to eat. Like, they don't have that stuff where I was at. So I'm like, man, I love Chicago. Like, I want to leave someday, but I'm not really looking forward to it. I might live in Chicago when I get older.
Yeah. What about you guys? What do you think of the city?
I love Chicago because our city is known for history. So it's been times, just like Pierre said, when he went out of town and stuff. I went to Louisiana, and it really wasn't nothing to do there. So my auntie, she was like, it's not like Chicago. Chicago got Millennium Park and Navy Pier and all that. She was like, in Louisiana, we only got one water park. I'm like, I don't want to go there because it was boring. So, yeah, I love my city.
Yeah, for all the things that we hear about, all the problems that we have here in the city, and there are a lot. I mean, sometimes we forget how lucky we are to live in the city that we live in or the area that we live in. And Shaquilla, what about you?
I've pretty much been in Chicago all my life. I never really traveled the world. That's why I'm so anxious to go and explore the world more. But in Chicago as a whole, I really like it. I know we have plenty of things we can go and do and explore and things like that, like go to the movies, go downtown, all types of stuff, and it's fun.
Now, Pierre, you said that you would probably come back to Chicago. Shaquilla, you said that you're going to big old New York City, but do you guys think that eventually you would want to come back here and live in the city?
Yeah, I think so. Like, my neighborhood now, I was just talking about telling my friend this the other day, like, if I see a house for sale when I'm in my, like, late 20s, early 30s in my neighborhood, I would buy it.
There you go.
I love my neighborhood.
That clip, again, from 2015, Outside the Loop number 449, three high school students from the Chicago Vocational Career Academy in the South Chicago neighborhood. And I think that this is important, hearing voices of youth and their experiences growing up in Chicago neighborhoods and challenging that dominant narrative of these neighborhoods. Today, as we acknowledge issues of violence in some of these areas, these voices remind us of our shared humanity, humanity that doesn't know any physical boundaries. Yes, the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 773, where Colin and I do a little recap of the show, offer some takeaways, and I think first of all, thank goodness for the Better Government Association, because this is an example of some of the really important work that they do when we talk about trying to speak truth to power and, you know, hold a spotlight on the inner workings of the city of Chicago. And in this case, you know, you look at what happened with these fires and really go look at that story, read that story, look at the map, look at all of the fires that happened across Chicago and the complaints that were filed and how very little was done or nothing sometimes was done to fix these conditions. And it's pretty astounding. So hats off to Madison Hopkins and everyone at the Better Government Association, because it's stuff like this we need to know about. And hopefully, you know, some action can be taken to correct it.
Yeah. And I'm really curious, you know, there is like a really delicate balance. I don't know the whole story. There's a delicate balance between like oversight and wanting to make sure that new housing stock, like what were they, ADUs? We had it on a couple weeks ago, maybe months ago.
Yeah.
Those new. Yeah. So like we're always thinking about new ways to invent, you know, housing stock in the city, and where's the rubber meet the road? Where's the, like the balance between like getting creative and all, but also like making sure that we're all looking after each other. I don't know. Those are like the going forward pieces that I have that I think about this, but I don't know. I just think in general, like we've got to protect the housing stock that we have and the people inside it. Right. And so that we have a good thriving city with lots of people living in lots of different spaces, you know?
Yeah. And I guess right now where my mind's at is this conversation about the role of government. And we're hearing that when it comes to the vaccine issue, right? That there are a lot of people who are hesitant for a number of reasons to get the vaccine. But you hear some people that are pretty vocal that will say, well, I don't want government telling me what to do. I don't think government should stay out of my life. Well, again, here is an example of where government can help, right? If it's done right, it needs to be administered correctly. So if the government is doing its job, and maybe after this report, hopefully things change, but if government's doing its job, they can get in there, they can correct some of this, they can hopefully prevent loss of life from happening. And I just thought about, boy, this is the time where government can shine. Now in Chicago, again, going back to why we need the BGA, sometimes the government gets lazy and people get lazy and it's easy to cut corners and then things fail. So in my mind, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, this is an example of where government could really step up and do something for the good of the people. So I hope that's the case from this report, which again is really extensive. Hey, your passion first. Very impressive mentorship. I love a story like that. And I hope those guys are really successful. They've got a lot going on, and it's international, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm really happy and want to advocate and support mentorship, because it's really critical and it makes such a difference. I've actually thought about potentially going down that road, or like what I could do as a potential mentor. Or even a young me, what that could have done for a young me. And I just think that those who are called to step forward into a role like that, the hats off to them. Shouts to all the mentors out there.
Yeah. I think back to young me. I had a few folks in my professional career that were very much like mentors, even if they didn't call themselves that, maybe unofficially mentors. And it was some of the best education you could possibly get. And so I feel like to pass that on to the next generation in whatever aspect of life you want to go down, you know, for us, you know, you and I have a somewhat similar background in terms of media, right? And if it's media, if it's culinary arts, if it's business, if it's sports, if it's whatever, that mentorship legacy, I think, is really vital and really does a lot for youth. So hats off to those guys from Your Passion First. And that kind of ties into that rewind segment, that clip that we heard from 2015 from Outside the Loop number 449. Those three high school students from Chicago Vocational Career Academy. You know, we were talking last week about the North Lawndale neighborhood, and we have checked in periodically with that neighborhood and other areas in Chicago that might not have the greatest reputation, and we're trying to highlight some of the good that's going on in those communities. And that was just staying with me. And so I thought about that show that we did from 2015, and I just brought the tapes out of the vault and felt that it was pretty important to hear from those high school students, you know, back in 2015. It's very much applicable to right now. So digging out some OTL archives, Colin.
Yes, and to follow up from our conversation to start the show, my quick search on the internet has revealed that 449 is not an area code used in the United States. However, it seems to be an area code for a couple of spots in Mexico.
Really?
So there you
okay.
go. Oh, wait. That's a range. I don't know where 499 is or 449 is specifically, but 400 to 4. Well, that's not true. I'm going down this rabbit hole. I got to do more research, Mike.
Okay. You need to go do that right now then.
I do because I'm familiar with a area code that starts with 4. And it's not, I know 408, certainly 415.
Right.
Shout outs to the 415.
Love Big them. Shout out to the 415, right?
415 is one of the most beautiful area codes of all time. It's gorgeous. Anyway.
Well, hey, let's not forget my birthday, March 12th, 312, Chicago 312, boom.
Yeah, look at you.
Is it time to go?
It is time to go.
And that's the wrap party for Outside the Loop show number 773. And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 773 is all wrapped up. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Have a fantastic week, and I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.